Welcome back, everyone, to the Crypto Market Rundown, where we talk about everything that's happening in the great world of cryptocurrency, from the fundamentals in the news to the technicals on the chart. We spend the time doing hours of research so that you all don't have to. And again, we have another action-packed week here, TiVo. And I'll tell you what, the halving is just over a week away. If you're not familiar with what the halving is and how it can affect the crypto markets, this is going to be the episode for you. We got it on the screen here, and it should go without saying that if you are coming in from Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere else, and you want to see the visuals that we're referencing, make sure you tune over to the YouTube portion as well, because that's where we're going to have all of the screen shares and images and videos that we're showing and referencing throughout today's episode here. So TiVo, from your end, how are we feeling? We got the halving just under 10 days away.
Yeah, the halving's 10 days away. And we were just going over our notes. We didn't even put these in the notes. Big week for inflation data, CPI, PPI, beginning of earnings seasons for the stock market. And so, I mean, this is a big 2 week window, I would say even maybe a month window for earnings and inflation reports. And it's exciting. The markets are volatile, hot, volatile. We're going to break that down. And if you are watching on YouTube, you can see that I look like an absolute lobster right now. We're getting ready for jet ski season down here in Florida. And if we are basically one big move upwards away from getting maybe a fleet of jet skis here down in the Florida region for the Crypto 101 team. So you're going to want to tune in and follow that journey as well.
Agree with you there. Yeah, fingers crossed that this little halving cycle, I say little, this probably bigger than usual halving cycle is going to get us to that promised land of jet ski season. Hopefully we can tune in a little bit more red and lobster like each and every week. But no, I mean, all jokes aside here, TiVo, if we can flash the halving countdown back up, we are under 10 days away from the halving. This is arguably the most significant and largest event that crypto could possibly have. And as you can see, the calculator or the countdown is only 9 days, 23 hours, 48 minutes, and 25 seconds away from it's estimated. And again, this is constantly being updated as new blocks are being mined, but we're just about 10 days away from the halving event.
Hey guys, TiVo here to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock, a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell all in one. That's right, 3-in-1 for triple the security. It's easy to install. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. It gives you keyless entry, so no more fumbling your keys when you have your hands full coming back from the grocery store. No more worry about the kids losing a house key. No more worry about a guest losing the house key or forgetting the passcode on your door. And for Airbnbers, it's a no-brainer as you can change the passcode at will between renters. It has available fingerprint recognition, and it has AI self-learning chip, so the more you use it, the more accurate it's going to be. You will have no anxiety with the battery charging. It is a rechargeable battery, and it lasts around 4 months, but don't worry, when it's low, it'll give you plenty of weeks' notice, and also, it always comes with a physical key as a backup. There's no monthly fee, unlike other brands that charge you a monthly fee to get your backup recordings. They're always recorded locally, and you will always have access. Customer support for the Eufy Video Lock is 24/7, so you don't have to worry about any issues you have, and it comes with an 18-month warranty. What I love about this product is it's truly all-in-one with the 3-in-1. You don't have to go out and buy multiple parts. It's all in this package with the Eufy Video Lock. So if you're interested in learning more, go on Amazon and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock. Again, that's EUFY Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock. Get complete control over your front door.
Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the Bitcoin halving, essentially, every 4 years, the mining reward for Bitcoin, for actually mining Bitcoin, is cut in half. This means that the inflation rate of Bitcoin is also cut in half, roughly every 4 years. Now, why do we say roughly? Well, because it's not based on any amount of time, but rather by the amount of blocks mined in the amount of Bitcoin that is being mined. And so that typically equates to being roughly 4 years. under the current circumstances. And so with this thing being just 10 days away, I want to show everyone in today's episode just how drastically this has impacted Bitcoin's price in the past. We're going to look at what's happened before the halving, what's happened during the period of the halving event itself. And then we're going to look at the year following the halving, which is the traditional parabolic market cycle that I think everyone loves in the crypto markets. And it's the one that, you know, fingers crossed here, we're preparing for not that far away. So there's a lot happening there. You know, TiVo mentioned that prices are squeezing as well. I think we can kind of open up here with a little bit of technical analysis to show everyone just how much the charts are squeezing over here. So I'm going to throw up a chart, and that way we can really see everything that's happening on Bitcoin right now. And the cool thing that we have happening here is that prices were seeing lower highs, yet seeing higher lows. Now, on a candle chart, what this usually equates to is a symmetrical triangle or a bull flag or a pennant, whatever we want to call this. Prices are squeezing and the volatility is certainly increasing. I mean, we can see that just a couple of weeks ago, Bitcoin was doing 10% days up, 10% days down. Even recently over here, I mean, it's not uncommon for us to see Bitcoin doing a 4, 5, 6% day. Even today, Bitcoin is down 4% after leaping up like 4 or 5%. And so there's a lot of choppy price action here. There's a lot going on, and we're here for it. So with this kind of squeeze that's happening on Bitcoin, you know, the main kind of question here is who's favored? Is it the bulls? Is it the bears? You know, is this kind of out of nature for the halving event itself? And the answer there is no. You know, this is very characteristic of the time right around the halving. And I still think that the bulls are the favored party here over the mid to long term. Now, I fully believe that we're going to see some choppy, potentially nasty price action leading into the time of the halving. And we're going to show exactly why I believe that. But it's not going to scare me and it's not going to stop me out. And you better believe that on these dip opportunities, I am still going to be buying the dips, TiVo. And so as Bitcoin is pulled back over here, we still have this relatively, you know, consistent pattern of lower highs on Bitcoin. But just yesterday, we actually broke above our previous high. I mean, you can see here that Bitcoin came up to around 71,500, chopped around this range for roughly a week. And then yesterday, we actually broke through this to a higher local high, but not a higher macro high, not a higher all-time high. And so Bitcoin is, you know, still kind of consolidating for the most part to the upside. And while the whole idea of lower highs is kind of in edgy waters right now, the higher lows, meaning that every time the Bitcoin pulls back in terms of price, that whole model is still holding really, really strong. And so Bitcoin came over here, formed a low at 58, 59,000, then a higher low at 61,000, then another higher low at 64, 65,000. And so this higher low or the bullish standpoint is still holding really strong. And the people who are fighting for control here and fighting to kind of maintain themselves is the bears who are failing to form these lower highs. And so price is gradually consolidating and grouping up and squeezing towards the upside, in my opinion here. And now what we're doing is we are just continuing on that path. So as we go into the time of the halving, again, I think that the macro squeeze is to the upside. I think we can get some choppy price action. I mean, dare I say, I think that we can even go lower than we are currently priced at, and I wouldn't be all that shocked. But I think that the big takeaway for me is that the ultimate squeeze here is still pointing upwards, and it looks like we're going to take that all-time high in the not-so-distant future. Now, is that going to be a week? Is it going to be a month? You know, I think it could be a little bit. I don't think it's something that's going to necessarily happen tomorrow by the time that this airs. I think we have a little bit of time to kind of collect ourselves. But again, in that preparation, in these dips, that's where I'm going to be really excited about buying. So let's go ahead and look at what's happened with the history of the halving for all the people who have not gotten to experience one before. So I'm going to adjust my chart so that we can see it a little bit more clearly. We are also going to look at a three-day timescale just to make everything a little bit more visual, you know, like visual on the charts as well. And boom, there we go. So let's look at this. Well, if we look at before the halving event itself, and again, we've had three of these in the past. We've had one in 2012, 2016, and in 2020. So if we start at the latest one, the most recent one of May 11th, 2020, we can see that there is a bottom before the halving event itself. We have a nice little bottom get put in, price kind of goes on a little bit of a recovery leading to the halving. And then you can see from this box right here, there is a choppy period where guess what? Bitcoin's moving sideways. It's having these volatile days. I mean, you can see from these days, it's going up 8%, then down 12%, then up another 14%, all in a single day. And then there's these periods of down days. I mean, there's weeks of down periods. It's a lot of choppy price action around the time of the halving itself after the bottom has been put in. Well, when we look at the weeks, or rather months after the halving event, we have these just parabolic moves to the upside, where the price of Bitcoin went from, you know, chopping around at $10,000 to moving from $10,000 to $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 in terms of like overall price movement to the upside. But this is, again, a pattern that has been repeatable. So if we go back to the halving cycle prior to this, and we look at the halving cycle of 2016, for example, well, we can see that it's, again, the very much the same story. We see that Bitcoin bottoms out before the halving, sees a nice little run kind of leading into the halving event itself, and then there is a period of choppy price action where prices are falling, they're moving sideways for an extended period of time. I mean, there's days over here where it's falling 5, 10, 9% in a single day, and then there's other days where it's rising 5, 6, 7, 8% in a single day. The big takeaway is that we have the bottom beforehand, the choppy time of the halving event itself, and then looking after in the months following the halving event, we have just this parabolic move to the upside from Bitcoin, where it was chopping around at around $600, to then going from $600 all the way up to, like, you know, roughly $20,000. And so we had this huge bull market of people being like, man, this is just wearing me out around the halving. I thought this was supposed to be bullish. And then kind of zooming out a year from the halving event itself happening on July 9th. If we look at like July of 2018, a year later, price went from 600 to 2,700. And then if we look at, you know, just a few months after that, price was already up to $20,000. So this huge parabolic bull run in the year following the halving. Well, if we also go all the way back to even the first halving cycle, it's the same story. There's no real difference happening over here. We have the bottom halving, or the bottom happening before the halving event itself. We have this nice little uptrend leading into the halving. We have this sideways period of chop around the time of the halving itself. We have some green days, we have some red days, but in the months to the years following the halving, we have again a parabolic move to the upside. And so what I'm saying here is, you know, are there any guarantees in crypto? Absolutely not. But if we run off of historical data, this rough, you know, framework that we have has been accurate, and it has always been accurate. Doesn't mean that it's foolproof moving forward. But if we're going off of historical data here, there is a rhyme and a rhythm and a reason to what's happening. And we can use this information to kind of help us give an idea of what could happen moving forward. And so, you know, fast forward to where we are currently priced at. Let's draw the analogies of what we are currently looking at over here. And what we can kind of see is that leading into the halving event itself, guess what? We had the bottom happen around a year ago. You know, so when the bottom came in at around 15, 16,000, we had this nice little kind of move upwards into the halving. Now we're having some choppy price action as we're getting ready to go into the halving event itself. But I still believe that we are going to fulfill that historical, you know, kind of outline that we've used in the past, where despite whatever happens here with choppy price action, I think that the long term, moving into the following year here, is still going to be quite bullish. So there's a lot of things to kind of look at on that front. And again, I just want to kind of reiterate my long term bullish view of Bitcoin here. Now, that raises a second question. And the second question is, can this affect more than just Bitcoin? You know, is this something that can affect my altcoin bags as well? And the answer there is yes. You know, if we look back historically at the halving, this is something that is kind of like an on-ramp for people to get comfortable. As people make more money in Bitcoin, they become more, I guess, risk tolerant with other things. They say, hey, Bitcoin worked out. Let me look at some altcoins. And then they start investing in the altcoins and they trickle down and they look for more on-risk investments. And the money starts flowing into altcoins. And so I think that the same thing can kind of happen here again. Although I will say that the ETFs throw a little bit of a wrench in that, because it's a lot harder to go from a Bitcoin ETF into, you know, an altcoin, whatever one that may be, than it used to be, because most people held on exchanges where they can directly exchange or trade Bitcoin for these altcoins. And in the ETFs, you know, Solana doesn't have an ETF yet, so they can't sell their Bitcoin ETF and go and get like Solana or Chainlink or Polygon or MakerDAO or something like that. So, you know, for those people, it might be a little bit harder, but it won't fully discourage them from investing in the altcoins. And I think a lot of the bull run that we've had kind of leading into this halving event has been largely due to the ETFs as like the sole catalyst. And I think for the most part, the whole halving catalyst hasn't even fully come into effect here yet. So there's a lot of stuff to look at on that front. And the other kind of question that people have been looking at here is like Ethereum, for example. Because if we look at Ethereum lately, Ethereum had a massive day in terms of dominance yesterday. I mean, Ethereum dominance rose by 5.5%. And I mean, the last time that it had a day like this was towards the middle of February. So this is the biggest day that Bitcoin dominance has had in about 2 months' time. And this is turning some eyes, because historically speaking, this has been an area of support for Bitcoin dominance, where it finds some support and starts regaining parity against Bitcoin. So as Bitcoin is kind of squeezing to the upside, some eyes are definitely turning back to Ethereum over here, as we can see from the daily chart. So if we switch over to the daily chart here from the 3-day, then what we can see is that Ethereum has this previous area of support that has now turned into resistance. And we've tapped this 1, 2, 3, 4 separate times. And we have a climbing level of support into a steady level of resistance, oftentimes associated with an ascending triangle, which is a bullish formation pattern on the candle charts. And so we're kind of seeing this. Ethereum's finding some support around the 20 and 50-day moving averages. And it looks like that price is ultimately squeezing to the upside, as is the Bitcoin chart as well. So I'm not counting Ethereum out here. You know, I still think Ethereum is bullish. Has been getting outperformed by Bitcoin in recent weeks, in recent months, yes. But I don't think that means that Ethereum is kind of down and out. I think Ethereum still has a bright future. I still think it's worth paying attention to. And there's a lot happening over there. And so as the Ethereum ETFs get closer, I think that that will be a huge turning point for Ethereum. You know, whether that happens in May or whether that may be later this year, I think that's something to watch out for. I mean, we looked at the inflows of the Bitcoin ETFs. And from the conversation that we had about a week ago with Matt Hogan, who is the CIO of Bitwise, you know, one of the companies that has its own Bitcoin ETF, one of the things that we talked about with him was just, hey, is it possible that Ethereum sees nice upside potential while only having a fraction of the inflow volume that the Bitcoin ETFs had? And the answer there is absolutely, because its market cap is also smaller. So it doesn't need to see the same kind of inflows into the, you know, I guess that the Bitcoin ETFs had. So a lot of stuff happening there, a lot of stuff happening all around the world of crypto. And a lot of eyes are kind of tuning in and turning in over here, TiVo. So, I mean, I'd love to see if you saw anything standing out in the markets. I don't know if you have any particular thoughts, but what a time to be alive.
Absolutely. I think that short-term basis, if anybody that's new or newer to the Bitcoin space, whether it be with running up into the ETFs or buying the ETFs, they have experienced their first, a little bit of volatility. Again, not like the old days where it might be 10 to 20% in a day. But, yeah. You know, the markets are moving. We're going up, we're going down. And so I feel like that's, you know, the first... They've passed the first level of their belt, you know, from white belt to blue belt, a long way to go to a black belt, obviously, but they have some experience in it. So if you're not getting shook out to this point, you're kind of buying into the narrative and believe in the product maybe even. So and I think that stems from both. And I've heard some of my people that I talk about, you know, I watch, you know, the finance channels, and there's some people that believe in Bitcoin and, you know, have held it for a long time. And there's some people that are openly saying I'm trading the asset, but I'm not selling yet. So, you know, there's belief on both sides of that. As for the Ethereum comment from you and Matt, I saw a tweet from Matt and he was breaking down, you know, you can easily, you know, say that the Bitcoin ETFs are bringing in inflows, but at the same time, GBTC is still doing a ton of outflows. So it is affecting the price. Whereas any run up in Ethereum, you know, there is no ETF inflows affecting the price or outflows. So the run up in Ethereum that you've seen thus far is just purely on people going to buy Ethereum. So if there ever is within the next year an ETF, you know, that's definitely going to be a positive for the space in the long run.
Yeah. And the good news from the Ethereum ETF perspective is that the outflows over there have actually been lowering. And thus the price of Bitcoin has been on the rise again with the outflows of GBTC kind of consolidating and falling below $300 million a day on a consistent basis. And so last week, I mean, I think the biggest outflow that we saw was on Monday, and it was of $303 million. Then the following day, GBTC had $82 million, then $75 million, then $79 million, and then around $198 million. And so the outflows are lowering. Again, I think we kind of talked about this too a few weeks ago, saying, hey, the more that they sell off, the more they're going to have to slow down. I mean, what are they going to do? Run their entire Bitcoin reserves dry? Then, like, what's the point of the asset management company if you get rid of all the assets that you're managing, right?
100%. And I think we've talked about this before as well, but I'm really, hopefully, we see the ETH ETF within the year. And I'm really interested to see how they approach that differently, converting their trust into the ETF with their, you know, fee pricing compared to what they did with the Bitcoin ETF. We'll see if they have any lessons learned that they'll be, you know, pivoting to a different fee structure for the ETH ETF. But I don't know. It's all positive stuff, I think, in the space, especially with the halving. So like you said, what a time to be alive. Excited to be here.
Yeah.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, I think we can also talk about the state of Solana and Ethereum, because they're both at pretty unique spots right now. When we talked about like the price of Ethereum, but like from a fundamental perspective, things are returning. Like there's pros and there's cons. So I think let's talk about the pros first. Paradigm just led a $225 million round for Monad Labs. And so they're building a layer one blockchain to take on Ethereum and Solana. Now, a lot of people are looking at that and saying, man, there are so many Ethereum killers, quote unquote, Ethereum killers out there. Why do people do this? And that's because blockchain is constantly evolving. And like most recently, people have felt the pain points of Solana and Ethereum and their base layers. And so, you know, the transaction fee, for examples, on Ethereum, you know, those have been increasing. And now people are paying $20-$30 per transaction, and it makes them unhappy. And then during times where the network congestion is high, they could be paying hundreds of dollars per transaction in gas fees. And so what people have done is they've really started to favor layer twos. Now, Solana was always like, hey, we're the newer, faster, better version, you know, self-proclaimed, layer one. And so you can come to us and have these super fast, cheap fees. But even now, you know, they're having network congestion. And so I think I have a link, TiVo, if you could pull it up, talking about how just Solana's going through some of these issues. And there are people that are looking for competitors and projects even on Solana are saying, hey, we're actually delaying our projects. Yeah, here it is. We are delaying our projects due to extended network congestion. I know I opened up my Phantom wallet for Solana yesterday, and I was looking at it, and I had a big old warning as soon as I logged into it saying high network congestion, and there are transactions that are failing and getting error messages. And people are quite upset about this because they were like, I thought the whole point of making Solana more centralized was to be able to avoid some of these issues. And yet here we are. And so people are getting frustrated. And so when we're looking at like why new layer ones are being created and why there's layer twos growing, which we're going to talk about in just a second, it's because of things like this happening. People get fed up with transactions failing and getting error messages and high gas fees and long wait times and all this stuff. And then they start looking at other alternative options, which kind of brings us into the final point for this topic of like, will this be a layer two market cycle? And so for people who aren't familiar with layer twos, they are essentially built on top of layer ones like Ethereum, like, you know, Solana, et cetera, and they're meant to improve it. So people look at layer twos like Polygon or Matic or Optimism or Arbitrum or most recently Base. And these are things that are faster and a fraction of the cost of what something would cost on Ethereum or on another chain. And so people are looking at layer two saying, why would I do my trading on the Ethereum main chain? And projects and builders are looking at this and saying the same thing when they could use a layer two and do it all for a fraction of the cost and save a lot of time in the process as well. And so I think it argues a valid point here of like layer twos this cycle. The more popular and the more that the crypto market grows, the more there's going to be an argument to use layer twos. And we've seen that with the explosiveness of Base here. So I think we can kind of segue into that. But Base has just been, I mean, we talk about it. It feels like every week over here, but they just continue to grow. Now, what we've seen here recently is that, you know, TiVo has it on the screen for us, but transactions per second on Base are at all-time highs right now, which is wild. I mean, think about that for a second. They are processing just record levels of activity. Now, some of the other stuff that we have seen over here, I mean, and the chart's just parabolic. If you look at it going from like March into April, it is a wild chart. And so it's understandable why a lot of these Base ecosystem projects are profiting. And what we're seeing is that Base is a chain. Is becoming really profitable as well. And so, you know, most recently, we have Base's TVL hitting $4 billion as their transactions per second surpasses Ethereum. Now, this now makes them the third largest layer two network after Arbitrum and after Optimism. So think about this for a second. I mean, we looked at this a few weeks ago and we were like, oh, hey, they finally hit $1 billion in TVL. Well, fast forward to where we're at in the current day, and they went from, you know, a couple hundred million to a billion, and now up to $4 billion in TVL, making them a true, like, force to be reckoned with in the Layer 2 space. And I think a lot of these other Ethereum Layer 2s are freaking out because people are looking at Base, and now it's a full-blown mainstream Layer 2. It's not like the small new fry anymore. And so this is another great chart. Just saying, hey, this is insane. Base L2s are now doing more transactions than the Ethereum layer one and Arbitrum combined. Think about that for a second. I mean, when you look at the transactions and everything that's happening over here, Base is just inserting itself into a lead position. And one of the cool things that I can actually flash up a screen share of before we move on is just looking at the revenue of Base and one of the projects that we've talked about on Base called Aerodrome. Now, we actually just wrapped up a podcast with them and it was great to talk about them. So if you want to watch that podcast and join us for any of the podcasts, you know, again, check us out, Crypto 101 Podcast. I know that's how a lot of you are listening to us now, but that's going to be going out in just a few weeks on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. So stay tuned for that one. I think it's going to be great. I think a lot of you are going to enjoy it, especially if you're willing to learn a little bit more about the Base ecosystem. But let's take a look at this, because when we are ranking the top protocols or blockchain projects by revenue in the last 30 days, then we can see at first place, it makes sense, right? We have Ethereum at the top of the leaderboard, needless to say. But at number four, we have Base. Now, this is wild because of, again, just how fast that they've rose. But they are the number four ranked like protocol or project by revenue over the last 30 days. That means that they are beating out PancakeSwap, MakerDAO, MetaMask, Lido, Aave, Avalanche, Radium, Arbitrum, Optimism, all these other familiar names, and the base network is beating them out. Now, there's another familiar name on this list for Aerodrome, which is the number one DEX and TVL provider for the base network, and they're now the 12th largest project by 30-day revenue, which means that Aerodrome is now bringing in more monthly revenue, or they did in the last 30 days, than Avalanche, than Uniswap, than, I mean, Aave, the Bitcoin, or the Binance Smart Chain, Arbitrum, Optimism, a lot of their competitors. They're beating these people out. So it's kind of wild to look at this and just the growth that's happened over here. And the reason that we bring this up is that, you know, this is something that should be on the radar for people. Nothing explodes into this kind of position. Nothing brings in this much revenue. And you just bat an eye to it and go, eh, you know, whatever. You know, it's surpassed some of the most popular and well-known layer twos and just blockchain protocols and DEXs. And, you know, we're just not going to care about it. No, I mean, it's seriously shaking things up when you have a new DEX that is solely on a single layer two. I mean, they're fully committed to base, pulling in more revenue than like Aave and Uniswap. So something to kind of consider, something that's definitely stuck out to me. But yeah, I mean, man, just a lot happening, TiVo. I know, I mean, even on the meme side of things, you've kind of seen some cool stuff happening over there too, right?
Yeah, just a lot. I mean, Twitter or X is just inundated with Stash and, you know, the funny, I think they're funny. They're a little out of pocket, but like, you know, the Joe Bodens of the world and all the political stuff. But I mean, there just seems, I saw one today. Everybody's talking about Vitalik Butter Chicken. It's like, there's something new every single day, and but there's billions of dollars going into it, which is insane. But I thought I pulled this, so I saw some stuff going around. I'll pull it up on the screen. Is that this last year, the United States, the people of the United States have actually never spent more money on lottery tickets than this past year. $113 billion spent on lottery tickets. Now that's more than movies, books, concerts, sports tickets combined, and that's per Nerd Wallet. And then another chart that we found here is compared to the government revenue. So we're about five times the government revenue is lottery ticket sales. So what does that mean? So we're gonna have, this is our last segment, we're gonna have a little conversation around that. So what does that mean for the American people? What does that mean, and why does that have anything to do with meme coins? And so I brought this as a conversation starter because we both, I think, agree that basically a meme coin is similar to a lottery ticket in a way. A lot of these meme coins are very upfront. They have no utility. They have no business. Like we just shared with you all the revenue statistics for Arrow, like there is none of that in meme coins. There, it's purely a cultural standpoint, and there's plenty of people on both sides of the crypto spectrum. The people that despise meme coins won't touch them, and then there's another side of people that believe in them and believe that culture is a huge part of kind of bringing the blockchain to the masses, and that it's very important. But no matter where you stand on that debate, you can't deny that there's billions of dollars being put into this, just like there's hundreds of billions of dollars being put into lottery tickets. And I think some of it is fun. Like some people love, you know, maybe gambling or playing the lottery, or we know sports betting is huge right now, or going to the casino with your friends. And I think there's a huge part of that of people like, I like this meme, I like this community, or it makes me laugh. Or, you know, you just kind of get into it as kind of just a gamble bet. But then there is another side to gambling, and there's people that probably are buying lottery tickets that shouldn't. And we've all been to casinos, hopefully in a fun environment with your friends, but you look over to the slot machine and there's, you know, this old lady that just can't stop hitting the button and doesn't look like she's having a good time. And, you know, you make up a little backstory in your head about who that is. But in my mind, sometimes I look at these people, I'm like, what are they doing here? Like, they're not having fun. They're not with a group. It seems like they're just throwing their money away. But no matter what it is, there's people, there's disposable income that's not being saved. It's being gambled. And I think that there's a higher message there that maybe, you know, the cost of living is getting so high that people are just kind of looking for something to believe in. And again, this is a personal opinion, but, you know, maybe there's a percentage of the population that doesn't feel like they have a fair shot at getting the wealth that they think that they deserve or that they want. And so they're turning to lottery tickets. And I think, Brendan, you had a good point, and I'll let you take the floor here, is that maybe the meme coins are the younger generation's version of lottery tickets.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think if you look at how many people, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but I would imagine that if you look at the people between the ages of 18 to 25 and what they're doing buying lottery tickets compared to investing in meme coins, I feel as if meme coins are the new younger generation's version of lottery tickets. Not to say that like we will never buy lottery tickets, like the Powerball gets super big and stuff. I think everyone throws a little bit of money at it. But I think when you're looking at meme coins, like they kind of are slowly replacing that. And maybe even sports betting is a little bit like that's our throwaway money. Our throwaway money is for the most part, like I don't really have any friends that go and buy lottery tickets on a consistent basis. But what I do have is friends who say, hey, I got a little bit of throwaway money here. I'm going to go bet it on sports betting, or I'm going to go bet it on meme coins. And I think that's what it's kind of replacing. Like this is the new and younger generation's version of like their throwaway money. And so they'll go and they'll throw it in the meme coins. And for a while, I was always super kind of pessimistic about meme coins because I would, you know, I just believed that there was no intrinsic value in a lot of them and that it was stupid. But then when you make the comparison about this potentially being our generation's version of the lottery, it makes sense because they can go in there and they can do this. You know, there's literally stories of people going in, throwing in $100 and coming out as a millionaire. And so it's kind of the same thing. You know, I kind of view it with the same hat where people can go in there, take the super high risk, super high reward is there. And so a lot of the times you miss and you come out with absolutely nothing. But, you know, there are those lottery stories of people who go in and they put in $100, $1,000, whatever it may be, you know, sometimes more, sometimes less. And then they just come out with an absurd amount of money. And so I think it's comparable. Again, it's not something that I'm super attached to, but you were reading through that and I just kind of saw the comparison of like, you know, the times are shifting and, you know, maybe this is my generation or the younger generation, even younger than me. Maybe this is like their version of shooting their chance with the lottery.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that like sports gambling, I find it fun and it gives you more purpose. Like you go buy a scratch off, like you just do it, you lose and you throw it in the trash. Whereas like, all right, sports gambling, like, hey, there's an event around it. Like we're going to get together, we're going to root for this team and hopefully we win, even though Vegas seems to always be right and get you. But, and then with meme coins, like as much as maybe there's no intrinsic value or project, it's like, hey, it's funny. And like, you can share these memes with your friends and it lasts longer. Like you buy a meme coin, you don't scratch something off or wait for some lotto balls to get pulled. It's like, okay, I'm in it. And then you're going to dive into the fun aspect of the community or whatever you like about it. And you know, again, hopefully you don't get rug pulled on day one or week one, but, you know, it should last a while or at least definitely longer than a scratch off per se. So I see why the value's there. And I think as a macro outlook, there's money out there to be allocated to every part of crypto, and we've seen it with the ETFs, but this is your pure retail type of money. They have money to spend. So if crypto and Bitcoin ever commandeers the narrative like it did in the last cycle, you know, there's hundreds of billions of dollars that potentially could flow in, because at the end of the day, some of these people are degenerate gamblers, and if they see that there's action, they're going to want to jump in the pool. So I think it's a different type of money that could come to the space, but there's stuff floating out there that I think could be attracted in the sense of some type of parabolic move to the upside.
I agree. Well, as time goes on, you can bet that we're going to keep you posted. You know, I think that's going to bring us to a wrap for today's episode, but as per usual, everyone, if you like the content that we're making and you like staying in the loop on everything that's related to crypto, we believe that this is going to be your number one place to do that. So if you want to stay updated to everything that's happening, consider hitting that like button, hitting that subscribe button. And if you really like these episodes, leave us a review on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, because that's going to be one of the great ways to kind of promote us over there.
Actually, just one final point before we wrap up. We've gotten a couple reviews, so thank you. And on Spotify, there's this, you can kind of respond. It says, how do you like the episode? And some people are actually starting to respond and tell us what they liked, what they didn't like, stuff like that. So it's the activity on the Crypto 101 podcast is heating up. So keep it coming. We're watching out for you.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you know, maybe we'll start starting off these episodes with shout outs to people who have left us reviews, and we can give them a shout out at the beginning of the video, maybe flash their messages and their reviews on the screen, because we love that kind of interaction over here. So whether it's a YouTube comment, you know, some sort of reply or review or whatever it may be, we truly do appreciate it, because we're always trying to make these better and better every single week. So again, everyone, thank you all for watching. That's going to wrap us up for this episode of the Crypto Rundown. And we're going to be back at the same time, same place next week.